Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's up? Welcome to the Daily Jungle. We had ourselves a really, really strong day today. That's the way you finish a week. We were all over the NBA draft. Lonzo lands with the Lakers. Tom Thibodeau absolutely worked the Bulls. And we had three excellent guests. Suns GM Ryan McDonough, Orlando Magic head coach Frank Vogel, and Bleacher Report's Howard Beck made it in. All of that, and we gave away two golden tickets on the best clone day we've had in quite some time. And it sounded exactly like this. The easiest thing ever would be for me to roll in this morning, crack open the mic, play sound from Lonzo Ball's old man, rip into him, and then open up the phones. I could do that, put my feet up, and just call it a day. In fact, most people do exactly that, but not me. I'm not doing that because it's tired. Talking about him is as tired as him talking. Because last night was not about the old man. It was about the son being drafted number two overall by his hometown team, the LA Lakers. I mean, imagine being a point guard from LA and then getting drafted by Magic Johnson. That's an awesome moment for a young guy like Lonzo. Or it should have been. But instead, the old man made it about himself once again. Because of course he did. That's what he does. It was the most predictable thing of draft night. Even more predictable than the cutaways to fans popping their jerseys and celebrating picks of guys they've never even heard of. There was no way that last night was only going to be about Lonzo. That'd have been impossible. Look, honestly, I don't even have a problem with the old man rolling in there with a necktie with his terrible logo on it. I don't even have a problem with him having his son throw on a pair of custom kicks that look like tricked out nurses' shoes. Although if you're going to unveil the shoes in June, maybe you have them ready before next February. But that's your business, and while that's kind of lame to me, I'm not going to get involved because it's your business. Nor am I going to replay the stupid stuff that he was spewing because everybody saw it. Everybody, including Ben Simmons, who tweeted, quote, crazy pills. Everybody, including Joel Embiid, who retweeted that with, please dunk on him so hard that his daddy runs onto the court to save him. And herein lies the problem. You see, this is the problem. Pops' mouth is writing checks that his son is going to have to cash. Now, it was one thing when the old man was saying that he himself could beat Jordan. It's quite another, though, when other guys in the league are saying how much they want to dunk on the kid because of what comes flying out of his father's pie hole. Now, look, I'm not here to hate on the Ball family. Can I tell you something? For that family, that was an awesome night. What father would not be busting out of his suit with pride if his son was taken in the NBA draft, let alone second overall to the hometown team and an iconic franchise like the Lakers? Hell, if one of my sons did that, I'd probably break out with the worst tie ever also. So I'm not here to crack on the family. That's an amazing night for that family. But that's enough. The plan, the strategy, everything that the old man has been doing worked. It really did. He's got a great kid. I mean, he raised a great kid, raised a great young ball player, and he went second overall. You know, bravo, Pops. It worked. But that should be it. Last night was it. The culmination. Mission accomplished. Your whole plan worked. Now, stop. Please. It's overshadowing a player who Lakers GM Rob Pelinka called, quote, just a transcendent talent. There's something very, very special about his basketball abilities, end quote. That should be the story. Nothing else. Not anything else. That right there has to be the story. So, if you're in it to help your kid, the best way you can help Lonzo and your brand is to let Lonzo be the brand. Nobody's going to buy those shoes because some 48-year-old dad scored a bucket per game 30 years ago and is wearing them now. They'll buy them, though, because Lonzo wears them. They're going to think the shoes are cool because they think he's cool, not because they think you're cool. And they'll buy them if he can ball. So let him ball. You know, the word is the old man was not a problem at UCLA. Good. Don't be a problem now either. Time to step back. Let Lonzo do his thing. It's not about you anymore. It's about your son now. I would say it was fun while it lasted, but it wasn't. The ride is over. Just get off. Beat it. Work with the other kids now. It's their time. 1-800-636-8686. And what we're talking about, of course, I've gone way out of my way not to get into what he said, because you know what he said. But as long as you know what he said, he talked about how his kid is going to lead the Lakers to the playoffs this year. Luke Walton knows what he signed up for. Remember, Luke came on this program not long ago and said, Jim, I'm fine with this. You know, I've got a pretty outspoken father as well. So Luke knew that LeVar would say something or do something, so Luke was ready when it happened.
When his dad says stuff like that, it puts a target on the kid's back. I mean, how do you look at that?
I think it will make it more challenging a little bit. But I think every top draft pick that comes in has a target on their back. The best players in this league want to set the tone with these young players early to let them know what it's like here.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, if you're drafted high enough, you're going to have a target on your back. Always. I mean, this is a man's game. That's a man's league. Except I don't remember a guy coming in who was a really good kid and a really good player who really never ever said anything and have a couple of guys like Simmons and Embiid lay him out the way they did on Twitter. And again, it was not because of the kid. It was because of the old man. See, that's the difference here. Luke Walton is absolutely right when he says, if you come into this league and you're highly selected, you're going to have a target on your back. Of course. But that's not why this guy's got a target on his back. He's got a target on his back because of his old man's mouth. Suns GM Ryan McDonough is my guest. Ryan, good morning. Good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good. Ryan, good to talk to you. So last night, when you're in the position you're in and you've got the fourth pick overall, what is draft day like for you? I mean, is it fun? Is it a blast? Or is it just stressful as you wait to get your chance to make that pick?
Well, that's a great question, Jim. I think how it is probably depends on, you know, how it ends up, if that makes sense. And, we felt very comfortable with the fourth pick, but we weren't sure exactly who was going to be there. Starting the day yesterday, we felt like the two guards from the Pac-12, Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball, would be gone for sure in the top two picks. But then there was some more uncertainty in front of three with who Boston would take. We felt like they moved from 1 to 3 in the trade with Philadelphia to draft a wing. And, we just weren't sure who that was going to be. So, as the day went on, we got more clarity and got the feeling that they were going to take Jason Tatum. Obviously, you never know exactly until the pick is called in. Then when the pick is called in and there were no trades, at least not in the top three, we had the guy we really wanted, the guy we targeted all along, and the guy we thought was the best fit for our roster in Josh Jackson from Kansas.
Ryan McDonough joining us. I was going to say, so Jackson's your guy. So what was it about him that made you feel like he was the right fit for you with that fourth pick?
Yeah, Jim, I think if you look at our team, we have a lot of young talent. In particular, we have a lot of offensive talent in our young core group. Devin Booker is one of the leading scorers in NBA history for his age. I think he's in the top five in terms of points scored before his 21st birthday, and up there alongside the likes of some of the all-time greats. I think the other four guys in his grouping are LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Durant, and Kobe. And, any time you're in that company as a young player, in addition to the fact that he had a 70-point game in Boston, that's pretty impressive stuff. So, he can score very well. Obviously, T.J. Warren is a very gifted scorer. We drafted a few years ago out of NC State. But we needed to get better defensively. We needed to become a better passing team. And, I think more than anything, Jim, we just wanted to improve our competitiveness, our grit, our toughness. And Josh Jackson, in terms of his skills, but also in terms of his personality, brings all of those things to the table at some level. And we thought of anybody in this draft, he was, in our opinion, the best player, but we think by far the best fit for our current roster.
Yeah, Ryan, to your point also, he also said himself, quote, I don't think the other guys in this draft really care as much as I do. I don't think they play as hard as I do, period. I think that's what really makes me special. I refuse to fail, period. So as a GM, I'm sure you're very happy to hear that. You know, the other issue here is he's got a ton of talent on the floor, but he did have some issues off the floor. So what kind of conversations did you have with him and those around him about the issues? And then what'd you take away from those conversations?
We did a lot of research on that, Jim. Obviously we saw what was reported, and I think the more we dug into it a little bit and tried to uncover exactly what happened. Obviously there was an incident at the bar, I believe it's called the Yacht Club in Kansas, that was not great, where Josh made a mistake, and he took full responsibility for that and accountability for it. But, you know, other than that, the more we talk to people about Josh, the more we got a feel for him as a person in terms of his character, in terms of what he values, the more we got comfortable with him. And, you know, when we talked to him on the phone yesterday, right before the draft, you know, he said whatever's happened in the past is in the past. And he assured us that he's going to come in, be the competitive, gritty guy that he's always been on the court. You know, we're talking about a guy, Jim, who was the consensus number one ranked player in his high school class a year ago, and had a terrific season at Kansas. So he assured us that, you know, he's going to be competitive on the court, but he's also going to do the things in the community and with our team that I think will ingratiate him here to the fans in Phoenix and hopefully lead to great things for us in the future.
Clones, let me talk to you for a moment about Ferguson. Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Ryan McDonough joining us. You know, Ryan, you mentioned Devin Booker. You mentioned that 70-point game he had back in March. I'm sure you knew he'd be good. I'm not sure anybody knew he'd be this good this quickly. But then I had him on the show earlier this year, and the other thing that's very clear is he has got a ton of it. I mean, the kid's got crazy it. How would you describe what he has that makes him different from other 20-year-old players?
He's just got a calmness about him, Jim. He's got great poise and great maturity for that age. I think being the son of a player, his father Melvin was a very good player. Melvin was the Big 8 Player of the Year at Missouri, and you know, was in the NBA briefly, and then had a long career, long and distinguished career in Europe. So you know, Devin's grown up around the game. You know, obviously he has a ton of talent on the court, but I think the thing that sets him apart, as you mentioned, is that mindset. And that mentality. And I'll give you a quick example of that. So one of Devin's best friends is Tyler Ulis. They obviously went to Kentucky together. Devin left after his freshman year, Tyler stayed 2 years. And so last year on draft night, Devin was with Tyler in Chicago. And ironically enough, as Tyler was sliding into the second round, Devin was calling me and texting me saying, you got to take this guy. You got to take him. So we drafted Tyler. The morning after the draft, Devin flew to Phoenix with Tyler. He went to the press conference, and then, you know, I look around, he probably hadn't slept much, if at all. And then an hour or two later, Devin's in the weight room getting a lift in, and then in the gym getting shots up before an event that we had that night with some of our fans and season ticket holders. So, you know, that drive, that competitive spirit is unique. And I think that's, you know, one of the main reasons why he's been able to accomplish so much in a short period of time after having just been in the NBA for 2 years. So I mean,
that's a great story. That's an amazing story. And the kid is still just 20 years old. Ryan, before you go, the team was mentioned in numerous trade rumors in the lead up to the draft, including ones involving Kristaps Porzingis. How much truth was there to the rumors? Were you ever close to a deal?
I don't think so, Jim. You know, I don't like to comment on specific trade talks with, you know, any certain team, but yeah, it's amazing how some of this stuff takes on a life of its own. You know, did we call and inquire about Kristaps? Yeah, we did. I'm sure the other 28 teams did as well. But, you know, short of that, I think some of the stuff we saw out there or some of the, you know, things that were allegedly close or some of the players or picks or things like that that were involved, I mean, that just, you know, it really took on a life of its own. And I think if you, you know, read what's some of the media reports or follow it on Twitter, it looks like a deal's, you know, potentially imminent or going to happen. And I'm getting calls, you know, from players and agents and the like. And honestly, we didn't feel like we were close to any kind of deal with the Knicks or anybody. We were very comfortable picking it four, and ultimately that's what ended up happening.
And Ryan, how much time do you spend in your day, be it talking to an agent, a player, a family member, a friend? How many times do you have to tell people, God, guys, just because it's on social media does not make it so? Why do you react to all that? Why do you read all that? You're just making my job tougher. How much of your job is spent doing something like that?
Well, yeah, I know how long you've been doing this, Jim, and been around, you know, general managers and owners and coaches. That is a big part of the job, you know, especially in the social media age. Things get out so quickly, kind of on the 24/7 sports news cycle, and then you're expected to respond quickly and immediately. So there are a lot of calls or texts to agents or players, kind of explaining to them, what the situation is, and don't pay attention to this rumor, or don't worry that you're going to get traded here or sent there. So, that is a part of the job that's, I don't think it's changed, but it's become more and more important and takes up more and more of your time. So like anything else, I think it's based on relationships. And what we tell our players and their agents is, look, you're not going to find out about anything for the first time in the media. If we're going to trade you or something's going to happen with you, you'll hear it from us first. And, I think if you have that trust and that relationship with your players and their agents, they'll know that they're not going to be surprised and find out about something online or on Twitter if they are moved.
One sound from last night to sum up the NBA draft. What would that sound be? It would not be Markelle Fultz's name being called first. It would not be Lonzo Ball being picked second, or his dad doing what his dad does. It wasn't the sigh of relief from Knicks fans when Kristaps Porzingis was not traded. No, the sound of the night was this. You know what that sound is? That's the sound of a dude who just worked his former team to get his favorite player, Jimmy Butler. That's the sound of a man who acquired a three-time All-Star and a guy who's a perfect fit for a system and can't believe how little he had to give up in order to get him. And of course, Butler is a perfect fit for Tibbs' system. He's been in this system before. He thrived in that system before. That's also the sound of a guy who's going to be rolling out a starting lineup featuring Ricky Rubio, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, and Karl Anthony Towns. It's easy to see that four and start yelling, "Playoffs, baby!" I love that trade. And it's going to have an impact not only on the Wolves and the Bulls, but the entire league. The Wolves suddenly look like they're a player in the West. That good. The Bulls are in a full-blown rebuild. And then on top of that, neither Boston or Cleveland are going to get Butler. And they no longer have him to make a run at Golden State. So that move does impact the entire league. That said, and as nice as the T-Wolves are, let's slow the roll for just one moment. It's still a T-Wolves team that had a lot of buzz going into last season and finished 20 games below 500. But that move, it scratches them right where they have an itch because they've got talent, young talent, but they need a veteran leader to show the young players how it's done. And nobody knows how it's done in that system better than Butler. If they were playing in the East, they'd be a playoff lock. They might even have home court in the first round, but they're in the West, which is a meat grinder. And they're probably going to need to make up at least 10 wins to get anywhere near the playoffs. I'm not sure they can take that massive step in 1 year. Maybe, but either way, I know I'll be checking it out. As for the Bulls, you're never going to get value for Jimmy Butler. You lose any trade where you're shipping out an all-star and not getting at least one back in return. I mean, those are the facts. They got worked. And if that's the best that they could do, then they should not have moved that guy. If that's the best that they can do, I'd be freaking out right now if I were the Indiana Pacers, because Paul George only has 1 year left on his deal, and he's made it clear not only does he want out, but he wants to go to the Lakers. Butler has got multi-years left on his deal, and it's a deal which is team-friendly. So if that's all Chicago could get for Butler, how the hell are the Pacers going to do any better for Paul George? And the answer is they won't, of course. But the worst part of that deal for Chicago wasn't even what they got in return from Minnesota. It was what they got from Butler's trainer, Travell Gaines. He served up as brutal an assessment of the Bulls front office as you possibly could in 140 characters or less. And I quote, here's his tweet, 0-82, worst culture in the league. I met drug dealers with better morals than their GM. He is a liar, and everyone knows. End quote. Straight freaking fire. Gar Foreman just went face first into the canvas. And as Andre Ward said on the show the other day, the face first knockout is the worst kind of knockout.
You're a liar.
Let's break that whole tweet down very quickly from the top. 0-82. That's good. That's strong. It's unrealistic, but it's a great table setter. Then he chases it with, quote, worst culture in the league. Yet now we're getting somewhere. By this point, Gaines has Foreman on the ropes. He's working him hard. He's going to the body. I mean, not just a mediocre team culture or a bad team culture, the worst culture in the league. And then, like any of the game's greats, this guy's looking to finish and close the show and says, I met drug dealers with better morals than their GM. At that point, the Twitter ref should have stepped in and stopped that fight. And there's got to be some code in the Twitter app that would have prevented Gaines from going any further, because at that point, Foreman was unable to protect himself and he was out on his feet. Except Gaines did land another shot. And landed did, quote, he is a liar and everyone knows. So if Twitter allowed 180 characters, he probably would have called him a liar and a felon.
You are a felon! You're a liar! You're a liar!
Calling a guy in that position a liar is a pretty ferocious dunk. Hitting him with, I met drug dealers with better morals, is going behind the back and off the backboard before dunking on a dude's head. I hear that tweet, and this is the one thing I think of. You can take that tweet, carve it into a piece of wood, put it up on a wall, because that's never coming down. Nobody's ever reacting to an NBA trade with that level of ferocity, and I love it. Even better than making it into a plaque, just unplug Twitter and shut it down forever. Shut it down and let's go home. There might be worse trades than the one Chicago made last night, but there will never be a better reaction. Ever. Frank Vogel. Frank, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim Rome, how you doing?
Good, Frank. How about you? What's going on?
I'm doing well. I'm excited about, you know, the additions we made to our team last night and, you know, enjoying my summer down here in very, very hot Florida.
Good man. Good. All right. So let's talk about your additions. Starting with Jonathan Isaac. He was a member of the ACC All-Freshman team at Florida State. Frank, you take him number 6 overall. When the team was able to make that pick and get him, what was your reaction? I mean, was it excitement? Was it relief? Maybe a mixture of the two? What's it feel like when you make that pick?
Well, we were very excited to have this young man be available at number 6. We weren't sure. You know, there were some rumors that he was going to go prior to that. And this is a young man with a tremendous, tremendous amount of upside that, you know, if you look you know, at guys that have the potential to ultimately be one of the best players in this draft, this young man definitely has that ability. He's got great upside, 6'10", with perimeter skills, which is, you know, a coach's dream in today's NBA. You know, he's got great defensive versatility, and, you know, he's got a chance to be an elite defender. So, you know, a great young man, high character, great work ethic, and very excited to add him to our team.
Frank Vogel joining us. You know, you got a guy who's 6'10", and Frank, it was not that long ago that if somebody was 6'10", he was an NBA center, but Isaac's got the ability, as you point out, to do some work in the mid-range. He hit 35% from three in college. So what's that tell you about how much the game has changed over the years that we're talking about a guy who, again, goes 6'10", and we're not automatically talking about him playing on the block with his back to the basket?
Yeah, well, the game has changed dramatically, obviously, over the last 10 years, but even more so over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, it used to be you'd have a point guard, two wings, and two bigs, and, you know, the game has really shifted to the point of having a point guard or a point guard in the center and three playmaking wings, you know, and the more length you have on the perimeter with those guys that have the ability to shoot the three, to put the ball on the deck, to make plays, you know, in the post and in the pick-and-roll game, get out in the open court, run the floor. You know, the more guys you have like that at the 2, 3, 4 position, the better off you're going to succeed in today's NBA with the style of play that's being played now. And, you know, like I said, he fits the mold. So we're excited about it.
All right. Now, he's just 19 and he's not turning 20 until October. So when you're coming to the NBA and all of a sudden you're playing against grown men on a nightly basis, how do you go about getting a young man ready both physically and mentally for that challenge?
Well, you know, the first thing is we're not going to ask him to do too much. You know, we're not a championship-ready team right now, but you know, we're certainly not going to come in and just ask him, you know, to come in and lead us to the promised land. You know, we're going to keep our core intact and you know, try to build on the guys that have experience and give him small doses, and you know, we'll see how much he can handle. If he can handle a bigger load, early on in his career, then and it certainly will increase his minutes, his usage, all those types of things, defensive assignments included. But, you know, we're not going to ask him to do too much right away. We're going to ask him to, you know, get his feet wet, learn the game, learn to be a pro, and, you know, fit in more than anything.
Orlando Magic head coach Frank Vogel, my guest. Frank, you just said it. We're not a championship team right now, but I thought you had a great quote near the end of the season when you said, quote, "I am very blessed and thankful to be the coach of this team, and I look forward to the days where we are the team kicking people's butt in the playoffs. I look forward to that," end quote. All right, so what does that next step look like? What's it going to take for you to get to the point where you're once again kicking people's butts in the playoffs?
Well, we've got to hit it on all fronts, you know. You know, you have to look at ways you can improve your roster, whether it's via trade, via free agency. I feel like we've done that with the draft. You're going to look at ways, every way that's possible to improve your roster. And within that, you know, as you're looking for those opportunities, you got to take the roster you have and you got to build them up. You got to raise your assets. You got to improve these guys, develop them, build confidence. And, you know, more importantly, I think for me and what we're doing here in Orlando is make sure that we're finding the right roles for these guys, you know. And I felt like early in the season for us last year, you know, we're still getting to know a lot of these young guys, and these young guys are finding themselves. And, you know, there was a big learning curve in terms of, you know, putting them in the right spots and the right positions to succeed. And we made a shift midseason stylistically with how we were playing and how we were using some of our young guys. And, you know, they really took off, and we had a strong second half of the season, and I look forward to building on that.
You know, Frank, you knew what you signed up for. You knew the challenge coming in, but it was your first season as a head coach where you weren't either in the postseason or battling for a postseason spot right down to the wire. So what was that like for you?
Miserable. Mm. It was terrible.
Yeah, right. I hear you.
Quite frankly, you know, losing is not fun in this league, but like I said, the way we shifted things mid-season, you know, really brought a refreshing approach, you know, to the direction that we're going, you know, and that's, you know, when you have optimism and a belief that the thing is, you know, the team and franchise is going in the right direction, then you can live with some growing pains at that point. You know, it's when you're, you know, you know, built to be a championship-ready team and you're failing. You know, those are the times that it can be real misery. But like I said, we made some shifts mid-season to put these guys in a better position to succeed, and they had a lot of success towards the second half of the season. So those are the bright spots that we're hanging our hat on, and you know, looking forward to taking the next step with that group and with this young man, Jonathan Isaac, in the fold as well, and gives us a lot of optimism and hope for what we can do next season.
All right, so before you go, what about the other player you selected? Wesley Owundu from Kansas State in the second round. What did you like most about his game?
His length, athleticism, and just his overall ability. This guy's a basketball player, okay? And, you know, we're looking – you know, I've asked to build this team around two-way players, guys that are above average, at least above average on defense and at least above average on offense. And this guy is that. He may not be spectacular at any one thing. Probably if you're going to choose that, it's his length on a defensive end. But he's an explosive finisher at the rim. He's got a three-point shot that's going to be effective in today's NBA. And he's a great two-way player, so we're excited to add him as well.
Howard, you're picking me up. Great to have you back. How are you?
Doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Now, the reason I did that, you and I have spoken a number of times throughout the season and the playoffs, but I had to get you back on, Howard, because the offseason has been even more interesting than the regular season or even the postseason. What do you make of what's happened to the NBA and around the league since the finals ended?
It's been nuts. I mean, you know, we always overreact and we're always prisoners of the moment. And then we say, well, this is the craziest thing we've ever seen since whatever or the... But this is actually real. Like, I don't recall a week leading into the draft being this active and the moves being this just eye-popping. We have this in free agency sometimes. You'll have the summer of LeBron or the summer of Durant. But a week where we had Dwight Howard traded, the number one overall pick traded before the draft even happened, which that just almost never happens, period. And then the Jimmy Butler fireworks last night. The general manager of the defending Eastern Conference champion team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, being let go for reasons that are still bizarre. I mean, this has just been an incredibly busy and dramatic, you know, last five, six, 7 days, and that's to say nothing of some of the other, you know, drama that had preceded that with some other front offices. But it's been a whirlwind, to say the least.
Nuts. Howard Beck joining us. All right, so at the top of the draft, the Sixers take Markelle Fultz, and there's a lot of buzz about the team. What do you think the Sixers are going to look like next season, and what's a realistic expectation for them in the coming year?
I mean, realistically, this is still a really young team, Jim, and you know, we still have to see a full season from Joel Embiid, but his 31 games were some of the most exciting, intriguing, and encouraging 31 games you're going to get from a guy. So if Joel Embiid can do that for a full 82 games and stay healthy, and then you're adding in Fultz, and you've got Saric back, and you now have Ben Simmons making his debut as a one-year-later rookie, you know, it's going to take time, and Brett Brown's a great coach, and those are all really intriguing young talents, but it's going to take time just to figure out how they all fit together. They still have some holes to patch here and there. I think they still need some shooting for sure, but you know, people should not get too carried away. Like Philly fans, like I'm not going to begrudge them at all getting extraordinarily exuberant right now because of everything they've been through and the potential that's there, but it's going to take time. Youth does not win in this league. Go ask the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they do have to figure out how these pieces fit together, and they're largely still unproven. So playoffs, let's not get there yet, but they should be a lot of fun to watch, and you know, maybe they creep up toward that 35 win level.
Howard Beck joining us. All right, Howard, in terms of Boston, Danny Ainge has done a pretty remarkable job in piling up assets. He's got all these number one picks, or first round picks, I should say, yet didn't use those assets to make a move for Jimmy Butler, Paul George, or maybe even Kristaps Porzingis. Do you think, given what he stockpiled, that he should have pulled the trigger and tried to get one of those guys?
That's a hard question to answer because we don't know exactly what it would have cost to get any of them. And there's always a question of how available are these guys really? Paul George is certainly available, but you're talking a one-year rental, and then the guy might just walk away to the LA Lakers next summer because that's been the rumor for months now. So you have to be cautious about what you're spending to get a Paul George. Porzingis, I'm not sure the Knicks are really that eager to move Porzingis. I just think that some things opened up and they started exploring options, and it exploded into a story as it always happens when it regards the Knicks. But I don't think they're necessarily eager to move him. So when it comes to Ainge, I don't understand the criticism people have here. This is a 53-win team that is way ahead of schedule after their teardown. 53 wins, conference finals appearance. They got a stud at point guard. They've got all this interesting young talent and more picks, high picks on the way. There's no urgency to do anything right now. Like if LeBron James and that group falter, you know, if they're going to move Kevin Love or something, or if LeBron is going to walk away himself next summer, you're already in the driver's seat in the East. I mean, there's, you know, Toronto could lose Kyle Lowry. They've got some issues they got to deal with up there. Washington's good, but not great. So Boston has no urgency to go all in on anyone. They can afford to keep playing these two tracks where they're competitive in the near term already and have all this youth and picks still coming. I applaud Danny Ainge's patience on this because You can blow this. You can get the best guy in a deal and still mess up in the big picture. They're playing this right.
Howard Beck joining us once again. Howard, here in Los Angeles, leaving aside the spectacle of his father, how do you like the fit of Lonzo Ball with the Lakers from an on-the-court perspective?
Love it on the court. And yeah, LaVar Ball, you're right, Jim, to put him on the side because we don't know, you know, maybe he'll rein himself in. Let's hope he does for his son's sake because Lonzo should be able to enjoy his moment now and his opportunity. And that team, you know, ever since, you know, Kobe started, you know, going toward the horizon there a few years back, knowing that that retirement was coming soon, the search has been on for that bridge to the next generation, which they thought would be Dwight Howard, or a new, you know, torchbearer. And that's now probably Lonzo Ball. It wasn't Julius Randle. It certainly wasn't D'Angelo Russell. Lonzo Ball is the guy, and his, you know, his court vision and his passing abilities are next level. If anybody recognizes that, you think it's probably Magic Johnson who selected him. And he's composed, he's mature, he's got a steadiness that his father does not seem to exhibit. So, you know, I applaud the pick. I'm happy for the Lakers. And, you know, the key thing with a young team as they are is to have that one leader type, that playmaker who brings it all together, who elevates everyone. And that's what Ball appears to be. And so I think it's just going to make everyone there better. It's, you know, promising things ahead for the Lakers. And by the way, they are still the team that looks like they're in the driver's seat to get Paul George if not in the near term in a trade, then potentially as a free agent next summer, if all the rumblings have been true over the last several months. And, you know, LeBron's kind of looming out there, too. I wouldn't rule it out.
Howard Beck joining us. One thought about that. So if they're the front runner still to get Paul George, and you have to assume that they are, Howard, when you look at what Chicago got for Jimmy Butler or did not get, we're talking about a guy who's got multi-years left on his contract, and it's a really team-friendly contract. If that's what they had to accept to get or what they got for Butler, what reasonably could Indiana expect to get for Paul George?
Not much. Not much. I mean, first of all, to be clear, and I think you've probably already covered this earlier in the show, you know, the Bulls blew that deal, I think. I mean, they certainly didn't get enough back for Jimmy Butler, given his talents. Paul George on a one-year expiring deal, you know, if you're anybody but the Lakers, you have to assume that this is possibly just a rental. And now if you're the Celtics and you say, well, you know, if we bring you in and we sign Gordon Hayward somehow, and maybe we make a run to the finals, and Brad Stevens is great to play for, and it's a phenomenal organization with a great history itself, then maybe you feel like at the end of all that, Paul George will say, you know what, I did want to go home, but you're right. I feel good here. I can see my future here, and he resigns. I mean, that's the play you're making if you're trading for him. But I think Boston and I don't know, maybe one or two other teams at best could hope to convince him of that long term. You know, San Antonio is that kind of team. But it's a really tough play, Jim, because whatever you're giving up in assets, the end result may be that you got a guy for 1 year. And that would sting. Now, the Celtics have enough assets to be able to do that and still recover, because they could lose him and still have more to spend down the road. They have so many picks. But most teams can't afford to do that.
Howard, before I let you go, it seems like it's a tradition that I cannot have you on this show without asking you, what the hell is Phil Jackson doing? So let me ask you, do you have any idea what this guy's doing with Porzingis?
No, I was as surprised as anybody else in New York for the last few days watching that all unfold. My best guess, Jim, and this is not based on information, this is my gut. My gut tells me that the Knicks have discovered a red flag or two somewhere along the way where they're just not sure. Not that there's anything wrong with Kristaps Porzingis, but just that, you know what, maybe he's just going to be really, really good, but not franchise star level good. And maybe they've realized that if they can sell high and get multiple pieces to build around, instead of just one piece to build around, that maybe that's the better way to go. But I don't think that they have determined that that's a certainty. I just think that they're, you know, gauging what the market may be. Because really, when it comes down to it, he is the only guy they have to build around right now. And if you got multiple pieces, you know, I could possibly rationalize that. But the way they've handled it, the way Phil has handled it, you know, leaves a lot to be desired, to say the least.
So what I'm going to do now is take a look back, because it is Friday and I am working. It's not the 3.5 days that were. It's the entire week that was. Alvy, let it rip. Yeah. No, just kidding. Today's not my Friday. What's up? Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. Hope you had a good weekend. I had a great weekend. Great to be back. And let's get this thing going. We start first with Paul George. He was trending number one yesterday. Thousands of car flags being slammed onto SoCal cars. And as you might imagine also, Pacer honks are pissed. Guys in the streets burning his game. Paul George was not the one who came out and held a presser and said, hey, yo, is this thing on? Is this thing on? Just so everybody knows, I'm busting out. And what more do you want from the guy?
Kepka, a major champion.
And it was Brooks Kepka who took over. A blimp crash, an E. coli outbreak, and the death of a 94-year-old spectator. Not exactly what the USGA had in mind for their first trip to Erin Hills. Rex Hoggard.
A little exhausted after that open, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, really? Why?
Long walk. From the first tee to the 18th green was 9 miles.
Gary Vaynerchuk joining us for a few more moments.
One of the people on Twitter said, Gary's accomplished so much. Wait till he actually hits puberty. That's self-aware. Like, I understand what my voice is. When you own your stuff, you always win, right?
That's right.
So to me, I know what I'm good at, and I know what I suck at. I'm a gangster businessman.
Some bro called asking what I was on.
What am I on?
I'm on the phones with Rome, boy. Sorry, not sorry, hater.
You got it, Stoner. Lincoln Riley.
I love coaching, but if it was a situation where I had to move my family every couple years, I would go do something else.
I've been listening to you forever, since you were on the Mighty 690 and you were a water boy for Hacksaw.
I was his update guy back in the day.
He never said, hey, Rome, bring me water. Adrian Wojnarowski. How did this come off the tracks, and why is Jackson doing it?
You are
further distancing yourself from a player who wants nothing more than to be a star in New York. And there aren't many stars in the NBA right now lining up to want to come play for the Knicks, and you've got one, and you're pushing him away.
I think we know what we're doing.
Falling asleep at a workout?
Jail.
Man, I'm pumped. All I want to do is talk about the smack-off. I know I've got to get into Vandalay Silva, but July 28th cannot get here soon enough. You don't understand how serious business this is. This is 365 days of preparation. I'm coming back to the basics, and I'm coming hot.
Hey, Shale, the only thing coming in hot is your urine sample.
Eric Hosmer.
You chill for about a week or two, and you just kind of turn it right on and get ready to go because you got to crank it up so early.
Do you call when I'm not here and self-gloss? Or are you afraid of the smacky chopper? Get to the smacky chopper.
Absolute champion.
That's not a trade. That's a fire sale. That's a dump. Which means now that Dwight is on his fifth team in 7 years.
Seven years
up in the pros. In case you didn't know, professional. Four teams, I made my dough. If you didn't know, now you know. ATL, let me go. Five teams for real, though. I still can't make my throws. No matter what, I'm still a champion. Yo, Sam Amick.
I'm amazed that they got off of Mozgov's money. That was an albatross, and it still blows my mind that Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak gave that money to Mozgov.
That's what I'm going to pull up and whack your ass with them two Smashville catfish and roll your ass out and leave you at the city dog.
We are joined by Andre Ward.
Face first knockouts are the worst, man. You never want to be a part of those, be on the receiving end of those. It's hard to come back from those kind of knockouts.
Sensually grabs the microphone, stares at Alvin DeLauro and says, would you rack me? I'd rack me. I'd rack me hard.
Draft day, not giraffe day. Let me say it even more slowly. Draft day? Giraffe day.
Email.
Let's give it a shot.
Fat, 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 fat ass.
Get that out because I'm not doing that again.
Twitter.
We saw two bobcats,
which was pretty cool.
Baby bobcat. Mama bobcat. Benjamin Watson.
Not only be a father to my children, but to encourage other men to do the same thing because we are facing a crisis and we will reap the consequences of that as time goes on.
Dennis Smith Jr.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
I don't want to get that guy in trouble. He's got to have lunch with the commissioner.
Monkeys,
lunch
monkeys,
with the commissioner.
Monkeys, monkeys,
lunch
monkeys,
with the commissioner.
Look, Ron, we all know in the battle for Smack-Off 2017 to beat the best.
Uh-oh.
I'm Wayman.
Jim Rome, I'm here on a Friday.
What?
The reason
days
I take so many days off is I get so many days off. No. Suns GM Ryan McDonough.
Did we call and inquire about Kristaps? Yeah, we did. I'm sure the other 28 teams did as well. Honestly, we didn't feel like we were close to any kind of deal with the Knicks or anybody.
Frank Vogel kicking people's butts in the playoffs.
We've got to hit it on all fronts. They really took off, and we had a strong second half of the season, and I look forward to building on that.
Matt in Vancouver.
Once you put a smack talk in Man Candy Canadian, like me into punk these has-been muffin-top Americans.
I've got to go.
Make sure you don't mix the sleeping pills with the jello.
Hey, hey, hey.
Happy birthday, handsome. Now, moving on from sunny beaches to sons of bitches.
I'll take your thoughts off Gruyere, bud. Rat me.
Because I've got to go.
Can we get dinner, you and I?
You tell me when and where. I'm there.
Done. Done.
Boop. I let you roll. Keep it pimpin', play, boy.
I'm going to talk to you, too, man.
Tactics for Twitter.
Bad girl.
Micro penis syndrome. Rat me.
Sex. Pass, sex. Pass. Sex.
On with
I am still head hen.
Kaboom.
Good night now.
Alvin, freaking incredible. What an awesome effort that was. Alvin DeLauro. Either we had an amazing week with great content, or Alvin did some of his best work ever. Matt in Vancouver. Matt, what's up? How are you?
Hey, what up, bro? My drug dealer is one of the most moral people I know, Rome. But anyway, sorry about the bad connection last week, pimp. At least it was a good chance to show Lef how one should handle a bad connection. And that's to regroup, come back strong. Not get back on one minute later and take two lame takes word for word. Rome, onto this boring poser, Zach and SLC, man. This cat talks so slow. If he slows down anymore, this guy's going to be talking backwards. I think if this moron said, I got a golden ticket, it would sound like Smacky Schmidl helicopter. And speaking of the Smacky Chopper Room, how many times does Dan and Denver need to get punked? On Twitter, on the phones, or even by you, Rome, before this coward actually calls again? Dan has been exposed as a hack-off caliber caller who landed one lucky punch 2 damn months ago. Dan and Denver is like a flat-broke Dan Gilbert. He was gifted a chance to play in the championship game, and he's doing anything and everything in his power to completely blow it up. I'm standing in the middle of the ring, and I'm calling you out, Dan. Stand in and trade like a man, or go back to being a third-rate emailer with horrible Vince Neil resets. Rome, once you put a smack-talking man-candy Canadian like me in to punk these has-been muffin-top Americans, it makes fellow Canadian and dirty idiot Tyler in Edmonton completely expendable, so we can just let nature take its course. Rome, please allow me to single-handedly salvage this 2017 golden ticket class. And let hit me with one, pimp. Peace.
Matt in Vancouver. All right, Matt, one thing.
Because I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden ticket.
What I want is an on-air RSVP. It's not really and truly official until you do it on air. Let's give it another shot. Mark, good morning. What's up?
Yo, that build-up was and letdown was just as much as it's going to be when Matt in Vancouver gets into the event. But congrats, Matt. That was dope. But, man, yo, you were right when you said the off-season and the NBA is so much better than the regular season. The draft last night was lit. Lit like LeVar Ball's teeth. You know what? I'm not going to do that. But yesterday wasn't all good, Jim. Did you see that Cliff Huxtable wants to go around lecturing teens and athletes on how to avoid sexual assault accusations? Okay, so what you want to do is make sure you don't mix the sleeping pills with the Jell-O. Hey, hey, hey. What is this going to start a trend now, Jim? Are the Menendez kooks going to give lectures to rich brats who off their parents on how to avoid drawing attention? Is Cromartie going to give birth control classes with his guest speaker, Alvin DeLauro? I got a better idea. Let's have Mark in Boston give a speech on how to not fall in love with your college team's coach. Maybe Mike in Indy could give a seminar on how to not speak like a concussed Marky Mark. Maybe Caleb the Walrus can star in Magic Mike 3. Who the hell knows? But yes, this is my official RSVP for the 23rd Smack-Off, and like that drooling Sasquatch chail, I'm going to pull back the curtain and take you through the details and minutia of my process. Are you ready, Jim? Here it goes. I'm going to pick up the phone. I'm going to dial the number. I'm going to participate in the Smack-Off, and I'm going to win. Wow, his process is so detailed. He's letting us in on the strategy. Psh, please. No one gives a crap about the strategy of that talking back knee stain. But I will say one thing. During the Smack-Off, I'm going to drop a little piece of intel that I've come across, a little nugget of information that was leaked to me that's going to change the game. You heard it here first, clones. It's going to be a game changer. It's going to shake up the world. And I'm going to be bringing back the crown to the land, Hollywood land. Oh, I forgot. Leff and Laguna should give a lecture on how to not overcompensate due to micropenis syndrome. Rock me!
Mark in Hollywood. Go ahead and rack him, Alvin. There's an RSVP. Friday, it's a good Friday right in the middle of Smack-Off season. Sarah, to what do I owe this amazing pleasure? Sarah, what's going on?
Well, today is Kurt Warner's birthday.
Of course. My bad.
Happy birthday, handsome. Anyway, Jim, you know what? I'm not looking for the golden ticket. I'm just here to get my spot in the year in review show. Let me see. Today's the 23rd. Yeah, you don't much go past July for that, so I'm going to strike while the iron's hot. Anyway, Jim, does anything warm the cockles of one's heart more than dad and lad felony convictions? Did you see Michael Vick's father got popped for heroin possession yesterday? Jesus, I guess the handcuffs don't fall far from the trees. Can you imagine Thanksgiving at that house? Hey, you hungry, honey? No, thanks. I just did a speedball. Hey, where's Michael? He's outside with the dogs. What about Marcus? He stomped out of here and took his girlfriend to Chuck E. Cheese. Man, what a bunch of losers. Also, you know what? I'm very late to the party here, Jim, but I'm still railing from Memorial Day weekend. How sad was that to witness one of the very first biracial superstar athletes, you know, a role model to boys and girls all over the world, making a fool of himself on screen. Yet there he was, running around barefoot, babbling incoherently. Man, I can't believe The Rock decided to make Baywatch. They should have just wheeled out a pickled Hasselhoff and a Hep C Pam called a Death Watch. Now, moving on from sunny beaches to sons of bitches. Hey, Dr. Dave, are you listening? You know, it's so funny you're a doctor, because we have to be nursed back to health after one of your calls. Hey, remember that time he called and some kid was tugging on his pant leg? That wasn't his son. It was one of his patients. Hey, speaking of which, I unwittingly became one of his patients when he blocked me on Twitter this week. By doing so, he technically inoculated me from his baggery. So I guess I'm a patient now. Dave, you need to put a sign out in your waiting room that says the doctor is incompetent. And by the way, why do doctors always have to let everybody know they're doctors? Hell, if we all went along with that, we'd have to call Cal in Vegas Dishwasher Cal. Oh, by the way, Cal, don't you have any friends?
you know, Matt and Van and Mike and Little Rock don't count. They thought they were going to Vegas to meet up with gals. And finally, Jim, my ATP crown may be tarnished, but I just want you to know, in the jungle pecking order, I am still head hen. I am out.
Sarah T. in Providence. Damn, Sarah. How long did you work on that script? Let's keep it going. This time we go to Wisco. Benny in Wisco. Benny, what's going on with you?
Not much, man. Greetings. Greetings. That's the longest time I've ever spent on mold, man. But that's all right. I got to hear some epic calls from the head hen and from Mark in Hollywood, man. Mark, Bill Cosby, Eric and Lyle Menendez, and Antonio Cromartie. Did the Fresh Takes bus forget to drop off Dwight the Champion and the Rat family this morning? Speaking of which, Jimmos, I'm calling you today because I feel that this year's Smack Off is overdue for some rat presentation. And we both know I've got the street shed to take care of this business. But let's get real for a minute here, man. I can fire these silly puns off, snap them across the backs of sports takes, no problem. But what I need is a challenge, Jim. And I don't care who I need to grill on my way to the top. Champs like Brat and Corona, Brick and NoCal, Stevie Mascarpone, golden ticketers from Canada like Tyler and Emmental, and Matt and Van Chevre. Good job, bud. Some old school participants like, well, Trapper. Hell, I'll even come after current staffers like Dave Breland or Adam Oaxaca. It doesn't matter, Jim. I am ready to crumble. I will sink my incisors into Iafredi until he becomes I Have Rabies. If he can't handle the simple fact that Smack-Off callers get walk-up music, he needs to get pasteurized. Chip and Dale Sonnen, you said the other day that mentioning topics that are too dated will lose you points. Well, unfortunately for me, I've just lost every point and every ounce of chedability I've ever had by simply mentioning your name. In fact, I just got a real-time text from my monster-in-law here, Jim. Let me read it. It says, Benny, I don't know who the hell Chael Sonnen is, but I just kicked you out of the will. Bon fromage. Mark, the nomad in Boston from Michigan via Florida, your Saved by the Bell-inspired Jim Harbaugh tattoo is well-documented, but here's the thing, bud. I know, you know, and especially Alvy knows that I am the real Mr. Bell Ding. Jim, in conclusion, I am inspired. I want to sit next to JaVale McGee on the podium of 2017 world champions that are also members of Rat Tail Nation. So let me know if I got that rodent ticket, and let me know when I can start growing that sweet, sweet smack off rat tail out the back of my head. I'll take your thoughts off Gruyere, bud. Rat me.
Rat him. Benny, you're in. I'm not going to waste any time with it. Benny, you're in.
Golden ticket.
There's another one. Two golden tickets.
I've got a golden ticket.
Here he is. He goes right to the front of the line. Dan in Denver. Dan, what's going on?
Rome, thanks for the vibe, man. Hey, Mark in Hollywood. I love the Bill Cosby voice. I liked it better when Brad and Corona did it on his winning call. You know, just like last year when you used the exact same walk-up music Brad used the year he won. I get that you want to be his understudy, but bro, in any other industry, we call that plagiarism. In Rome, the only thing worse than bad clone-on-clone crime is Canadian clone-on-clone crime. Can't you just see Matt and Van and Tyler and Edmonton circling each other, beating their hooves on the ground in some sort of weird Canadian mating dance? They lock horns. The summer of 69 starts playing. Jim, back when we didn't have weak-ass Canadian representation in the Smack-Off, those were the best days of my life. And Matt, it was super cute seeing you fawning over Callan Vegas on Periscope. But I couldn't help but notice you had your hand over the top of your drink. Smart. Standard Cosby killer move. What is this, Rome? Some sort of third-rate dating app like CloneLosersMeet.com or Big Bag Mingle? How'd these guys even find each other? It's like the 80s NBA versus today's NBA. Cal and Matt are like the AAU or Triple U bags hanging out and sharing ideas. And I'm like Charles Oakley. I hate all of you and I want to kill you. Now it's time to pass the no-contact baton to Rick in Buffalo. That scared coward knows I'll eat his kids if he calls, or he's just terrified of the helicopter. Out.
Here's the thing. I know that you all badly, badly want me to rip that guy's golden ticket. I know you want that. So then you can pile on this guy, dance on his grave, except I can't. That's just, it's fact. That was not a bad enough call for me to rip a man's golden ticket. You know it. Thank you very much for listening, clones. You know I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Now, why don't you go ahead and do what you normally do and just trust that podcast. Check back Monday for more Daily Jungle. Have an amazing weekend. See you next time.